welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 29. Thank you for joining me today. I know that you're listening to me because you have a passion for tennis, you love the sport, and you want to improve your game. You want to become a better tennis player. And that's my goal here at the Essential Tennis Podcast, is to give you good information and solid technical instruction that you can take to the court and practice. And through implementation and hard work, you can become a better player. Today on the podcast, we have Dr. Jack back on as a guest, and we're going to talk about hydration and how to avoid cramps in your tennis play. After that, we're going to talk about the focus topic of the week, which this week is the use of slice or backspin in your tennis game. We're going to talk about how to use it, how it's made, and the best types of strokes and types of shots that you can use backspin with to create better tennis shots in your game. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the great tennis content coming your way.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Sports Medicine Talk with Dr. Jack Kripsack.
Hey, Dr. Jack, how are you?
Great, Ian. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be talking to you again, and I hope you had an enjoyable time on your vacation and you were able to get some quality relaxation in. Did you enjoy your time off?
Yeah, it was great. We were down in Hilton Head, South Carolina, had a great time, got out to the beach, got to play some good tennis.
Good.
Got to catch up, give a little shout-out to my buddy Matt Wooler, who I take lessons from down there. And,
cool.
And Matt's just coming off some back surgery, and he's looking good, so I'm glad to see him back up and around.
Nice. That's good. I'm sure as a medical doctor, you're always happy to see people recovering from stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's nice when people get better, definitely.
Nice. Well, I announced on our last podcast we were going to talk about core strengthening. But Dr. Jack thankfully reminded me about a different topic that I had a question about actually about around a week ago, I believe. And that topic has to do with hydration. And it just so happens that's a topic that Dr. Jack is passionate about and is interested in. And we were talking about it, and that reminded me of Darius's question. So what do you say we get to his question and try to help him out, Dr. Jack?
Let's go.
Okay. Well, Darius posted this on the Essential Tennis forums at EssentialTennis.com. He wrote and says, on a three-set match on a 94-degree weather day in Northern California, my calves cramped up during the third and final set. As an aggressive net player, this is a death sentence. I pretty much played through it with my mobility cut in half. I thought, or at least I thought, I was hydrated. I ate some oatmeal about 3 hours before my night match at work, drank water throughout the day, and ate a banana 1.5 hours prior. During the match, I was drinking during changeovers and ate another banana, so I pretty much think this may be fitness-related. So he says his question is there a quick solution during a match to this, or pretty much once I hit that threshold, will I be having to play through it and just having to keep trying to hydrate? So, Dr. Jack, is this something that you know, does it sound like you prepared adequately, or by the very fact alone that he did cramp, is there something that he didn't do ahead of time that he should have done better?
Oh, boy, and this opens up a whole Pandora's box full of topics here. Yeah, well, there are several issues to be addressed. First of all, when you talk about getting heat cramps or cramping up, it can be due to a bunch of different things.
Okay.
A couple of these things were touched on, and it may be a culmination of several things, not just one particular aspect.
Okay.
First of all, there's something that we talk about with acclimatization, which is your body getting used to an increase in temperature changes. Now, having lived in Wisconsin and now in Maryland, and I live in New Jersey, you know, we have those temperature changes from spring into summer, and we can go from some cool days to some hot days.
Sure.
And when that happens, your body isn't used to the heat. So when you start sweating, you lose more salt in your sweat the first 7 to 14 days. So you throw your sodium off in your body, and that helps to incur the cramps, that creates the cramps.
Okay.
So that can be a problem because your body just isn't used to it.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is, what do you drink? Now, if you drink too much water, there's no salt in that, so that you're not replacing the salt that you've lost in the sweat.
I see.
And so you further compound the problem by getting what we call hyponatremic, not enough sodium. And this can lead to cramping. It can lead to problems with concentration and mental function, as well as neuromuscular function, so you're not quite as coordinated. And in extreme severe cases, it can lead to brain swelling and death. But that's really rare. But there have been reported cases of that with football players and marathon runners that are just drinking way too much water.
So it
actually can be a problem.
So you're saying that by drinking only water, he's actually putting himself at a disadvantage?
Correct. Absolutely. You know, they talk about drinking water the first half hour and then going in Gatorade after, but or a sports drink after, but really just drink the sports drinks. And it's not so much that you're replacing the sodium or potassium that you've lost with the sweat. You're actually encouraging the food to be absorbed through your intestines into your bloodstream, and therefore you're not putting such a strain on your heart and burning up calories, because if you become dehydrated, you burn up a lot of calories in your body, which can then lead to muscle cramps.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember, years ago, they talked about the Dallas Cowboys drinking pickle juice at halftime for cramps.
Wow.
They were loaded with salt, and that's
sure.
And that would help, you know, replenish the salt depletion. Conditioning and training was touched upon, and yes, absolutely. If you're not in adequate shape, then your muscles are going to fatigue more quickly, and you're going to get the cramps. So making sure that you're doing some cross training, doing some, you know, some running work, some jumping rope is fantastic. We've talked about that in the past.
Uh-huh.
Maybe doing some plyometric training and some neuromuscular balance training will all help keep your muscles toned and fit so that they don't fatigue and tire and lead to those cramps.
Which of those two possible causes between the improper hydration or type of hydration and possibly a physical, you know, lack of conditioning, which would you guess is probably the bigger culprit here in Darius's case?
It sounds like he probably drank too much water.
Okay.
And then medications, like say if someone's taking antihistamines or decongestants, mm-hmm. or, you know, people that have attention deficit disorder problems and they take Concerta or Adderall or Ritalin to help concentration, all these things will potentiate the risk of having cramps and dehydration.
Gotcha.
There was this, you know, we always talk about caffeine, and there's been some interesting concepts with that in the sports medicine literature, that if you drink coffee or Coca-Cola every day, your body gets accustomed to that so that it's not going to cause such a dehydration problem. But if you're not drinking coffee or caffeine or Coca-Cola every day, and then all of a sudden you decide to make that your fluid hydration choice,
uh-huh.
caffeine is in itself a diuretic, and it causes you to lose fluids, and therefore that will accelerate the dehydration and cause more cramps.
Huh.
So, you know, if you don't usually drink coffee, and then you say, hey, I got a big match day, I'm going to drink some coffee or a Joe Cola to give myself like a little boost of energy or take some type of like those stacker pills or whatever,
sure.
And guess what? You're going to be more likely to cramp that day because you're going to accelerate your dehydration.
That reminds me of a real quick story here. I once played a relatively high-level tournament in Michigan, big draw, and my first round match was against this middle-aged guy, which right away I figured I'd probably have an easy round. And he pulls out of his racket bag a 2-liter bottle of orange soda. And he's drinking this during changeovers.
Man. So, and you know what? That Mountain Dew and Sunkist have more caffeine than Coca-Cola.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Sun-kissed and Mountain Dew have more caffeine than a regular Coke or Pepsi. Huh.
Well, anyway, I beat this guy 6-0, 6-1, and I wasn't happy. I let him have that one game. there's a good good indicator right there. You're about to have an easy first round. The 2 liter of soda.
that's an interesting story. Oh, good. So you know, and then what do you do once you start cramping? All right,
yeah.
Once you start cramping, it's like, you know, the horse is out of the barn. You can do some stretching. You can drink your sport drinks, and it may help you a little bit, but. You know, like with the high school kids I work with here and college athletes and professional athletes, when they start cramping up, they get rushed to the locker room and we pump them up with IV fluids. And then,
really?
Then they get back in because you're just not going to have enough time. It's going to take 20, 30 minutes once you ingest a sport drink and it hits your stomach and then it has to make its way down into your small and large intestines before it gets absorbed back into your bloodstream. So it's just too long of a period of time to adequately rehydrate yourself. So you want to be very vigilant about hydrating adequately before you get out on the court and not have to worry about catch up because you can't really catch up. It's just not going to happen. So like at this time of the year, all the high school kids are back into the swing of things, and they're, you know, the soccer players, the football players, they're doing their, you know, their 2-a-days and whatnot in the summer. And one of the things we make them do, or I definitely make my teams do, is they have to drink a 16-ounce bottle of Gatorade before they go to bed at night and another 16-ounce bottle of Gatorade or sport drink first thing in the morning for breakfast. And then you want to have about 4 ounces of a sport drink about every 15 to 20 minutes or so of competition, especially when you're going into a warmer climate. And we even see them, like, in the night games here. A kid will cramp up, and it's a night game, and it's 50, 60 degrees outside, and some of that is just due to loss of sweat. They're not used to it or muscle fatigue. And really, the IV fluids are what's going to get you out of that problem the quickest.
Okay.
A lot of times they just go back and cramp right up.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, great. So just to wrap up here...
Ahead. Just one other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sport drinks are better, not only than water, because with water your sodium's going to drop too low, but a lot of people may drink a fruit juice, like an orange juice. You'll see kids eating oranges or having some type of orange juice or grape juice or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But there's too much sugar in those drinks.
Really?
And what happens is when those drinks hit your stomach, your body actually draws fluid out of the bloodstream into the stomach to dilute it before it can be reabsorbed into the intestine. So you're going to cramp just as much from drinking orange juice, which you think has a lot of potassium, is going to help you. It's actually going to hurt you. So that's why those sport drinks are so good.
All right, so your Gatorades and your Powerades and that sort of thing.
All sport, yeah.
They really, I mean, I guess not knowing the science behind them, you would think maybe they're just kind of marketing ploys or maybe gimmicky, but they're really, you know, they're really important, aren't they?
They very much are. Yeah, it's not a marketing ploy. They really do work, and there's a real physiological basis to why they work, and they're excellent. One other thing is we've had people that are chronic crampers that even doing that isn't enough.
Uh-huh.
You can take a little pinch, like a quarter teaspoon of salt, and add that to your Gatorade.
Okay.
The first one in the morning. And like I've had a couple of kids that have been crampers even despite doing this Gatorade hydration. We throw that little extra salt in there, and boom, they're set. No more cramps.
So the big thing is, as far as prevention is concerned, is the sodium.
Yes, adequate hydration, adequate muscle training, proper exercise, proper flexibility and stretching, avoidance of caffeine if you're not a regular caffeine user, you know, being cognizant of any medications that you may take, and have the sport drinks.
Okay.
Hydrate with the sport drinks.
Okay. And then lastly, just to reiterate and just to really answer his question directly, so once he did start cramping, it was kind of over at that point,
yeah,
right? I mean, there's not much he can do.
No, and that's why he struggled through the rest of the match because you just can't catch up. You can't catch up. You know, I remember John Madden saying, you know, don't drink when you're thirsty because it's too late.
Yeah. No, I can't remember which of my coaches told me that, but I remember hearing that when I was younger, and that really stuck with me.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, Darius, hopefully that answers your question fully. And Dr. Jax, thanks so much for giving us that great information.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, Essential Tennis listeners and readers of the website, you know, these are people that are really passionate about it. And I know you guys are out there working hard and playing hard, and this is really important stuff. I'm sure Dr. Jack would love to really say, you know, this is important. This is something you need to know and take care of for your own health and safety.
Yeah, it's really important. And you know, Ian, we're going to come back and we're going to revisit this this topic again about how this hydration affects your performance.
Sure.
Because I don't think people even realize that to the extent that they need to. And it's not just about preventing the cramps or heat illnesses. It's about performance. Because if you're not drinking, you're toast.
Yeah. You told me you have some medical studies and whatnot.
Oh yeah. Okay. We'll hit that at another time.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Something to look forward to there. All right, thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Jack. As always, I appreciate your support of the podcast, and your information is excellent as always.
Always a pleasure, Ian.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dr. Jack. Take care.
All right. You too.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com.
Okay, let's get down to business now and start talking about our focus topic of the week, which is slice. The use of backspin can be very useful in your game and can get you out of some tricky situations if you know how to use it and when is best to use it. And the actual technique of how you create backspin in the first place. Well, backspin or slice is rotation on the ball that rotates from underneath out towards the net. So it's rotating from under the ball around back towards you as the ball is traveling towards the net. That's backspin, as opposed to topspin, which rotates the opposite direction. Ball rotates from the top over down towards the net as the ball is traveling from you to your opponent's side. That's topspin. Now, the difference between backspin and topspin, as far as ball flight and characteristics on the ball, backspin travels a little bit straighter and a little bit flatter, depending on how you hit it. So you can hit a floating slice shot, which sits up in the air and tends to float a little bit longer. And you can also hit more of a cutting or knifing slice, which is a straighter shot and travels straight through the air and kind of tends to have a little bit flatter path than your typical drive or topspin shot. Topspin, on the other hand, creates a curve in the ball. So it's basically the opposite from slice. Slice creates a flatter path through the air. Or a more of a floating path through the air, upwards and then floating and sitting up, whereas topspin makes the ball curve downwards. And once the ball bounces on a slice shot, the ball will sit and come back a little bit more than it normally would. So if on a drive the ball bounces X amount, on a slice shot the ball would bounce less than X. The ball would come and sit up more or actually come back a little bit towards the net. And on a topspin shot is the opposite. The ball would bounce more than X. The ball would bounce and then accelerate upwards and forwards towards the direction that you hit the ball. That's how a ball reacts with more topspin. Now let's talk a little bit about technique. And we're going to talk in generalities first, and then we'll get a little bit more specific in talking about exact ways that you can use backspin. In general, the technique of hitting backspin or slice is an open racket face. So at contact, your racket will be facing upwards slightly. On a topspin or on a drive shot, And we're talking about ground strokes here. On a topspin or drive ground stroke, your racket face should be perpendicular at contact. So your racket is flat and 90 degrees to the ground at contact on a topspin shot. And on a slice shot, your racket will be slightly open. It'll be facing upwards. And the actual angle that you decide to use is going to change depending on the type of shot exactly that you're trying to accomplish. We're going to talk about that more in a minute. The path of your racket, meaning the direction and speed that your racket is actually traveling, apart from where it's actually facing, is forwards, out towards your target, and slightly down. So rather than a topspin ground stroke or a driven ground stroke, which is upwards and forwards, a slice or backspin ground stroke is downwards and forwards. And exactly how much down or how much forwards is in the swing is going to be dependent on what type of swing you're trying to hit, exactly what kind of result you're going for on the shot in question. So let's talk about a couple specific types of shots that you can achieve using backspin. Backspin is very, very useful for several different types of shots, and we're going to talk about four different types of shots that topspin makes better. We're going to discuss four of them briefly. And those four are being defensive, when you're on the move and you're kind of stretched out. Slice is a good shot, is a good type of shot to use. Slice is good for touch and hitting the ball softly. Slice is good for keeping the ball low when you want to keep the ball low to the ground. And it's also good for lobbing and hitting up into the air. Let's talk about defense first. When you're stretched out and you're in a baseline rally and you're having to move off the court to retrieve a ball, slice is good to use in that situation for two reasons. First of all, as I mentioned a second ago, the ball tends to float more. It'll sit up in the air, and it takes longer to get to your opponent. That means more time for you. Now, if your opponent likes to come up to the net and put balls away from there, the slice might not be the best option because the ball will tend to float a little bit more, depending on how you hit it exactly. But in general, a slice shot will float a little more. It'll go a little bit slower. And so that might not be the best choice if they're coming in to put the ball away. If they're staying back on the baseline, slice is a great option because you can hit the ball deeply, even with backspin. And so you can keep your opponent back behind the baseline. And the ball floats up into the air a little bit more, which gives you time to get back. To accomplish this type of shot, you're going to have a long forwards racket path. Your racket will travel out towards your target, and your face will be slightly open. It's not going to be wide open facing up towards the sky. We're not trying to create a ton of spin here, but we're just going to open the face enough that we're going to easily clear the top of the net and enough that the ball is going to float back deep into the court. So we're not trying to knife downwards and make a ton of spin. But we are trying to open it enough that the ball will easily float over the net and hopefully travel deeply into the court to buy us some time to get back to the middle and to keep our opponent back behind the baseline so that he or she can't move in and attack further on the next shot. All right, next up is touch. And let's talk about how to hit a good drop shot. We've seen players like Djokovic and Murray with their nice touch from the baseline and a little bit closer in as well, hitting drop shots during the U.S. Open. It's a really fun shot to hit. I enjoy drop shotting a great deal in singles. And to hit this shot, your face is going to be more open. This is a much softer feel type shot. And so you need a wide open racket face to hit a good drop shot. Your racket face should be around 45 degrees. If a ground stroke with topspin is hit at 90 degrees, your racket face will be halfway open. So you're not going to be facing your racket straight up, but it's not perpendicular either. It's about halfway in between, about 45 degrees or so. And again, this is at contact. Also, your racket path is going to move more downwards. And so the combination of a more open face and a more downward racket path means that the ball is going to go up into the air and the downward path is going to add more backspin and more slice to the ball. So this is, we're hitting more backspin on this shot than, say, the defensive shot we talked about a second ago, because that backspin is going to allow us to hit the ball with more touch and a little bit more softly. And also, when the ball does land on the other side, the ball is going to sit back towards the net, away from your opponent, more so than if you were to hit it with less slice. So that backspin serves two purposes. It's gonna help us have more touch and hit more softly, because our face is more open, and so we can hit the ball up and float it more softly. And the backspin is going to make it a tougher shot for your opponent to get to. So that's how you hit a good drop shot. And guys, quickly, we're halfway through here on the specific instances of ways to use slice. These are generalities, and you know, this isn't the tell-all, end-all of how to hit these strokes. I could spend a whole podcast on any one of these four on how to hit a lob or a drop shot or a defensive shot correctly. But I just want to give you guys a good basic understanding of how slice is used. Next up is low. You can keep the ball more low. I'm not sure that's correct. You can keep the ball lower with slice, as opposed to a drive or topspin. Topspin, when it hits the court, jumps up off the court. And in the instance of, let's say, an approach shot, you may not want that. If you're coming into the net trying to put the ball away, you probably don't want the ball to come up off the court higher, where your opponent can try to put the ball away from a little bit more aggressive of a height. If your opponent is able to hit it waist height where he or she is comfortable, they're going to have an easier time passing you. Now, that being said, if you can hit heavy topspin and have it kick up at your opponent, that can be very, very useful as well. But if you're not able to do that, slice might be a good option, because slice, when it hits the court, stays lower. And that means on your way up to the net, if you're able to keep a nice slice shot deep in the court, you're going to keep the ball below your opponent's strike zone and make it tougher for them to pass you. They're going to have to hit upwards more and lift the ball, which hopefully will leave you a nice, easy volley. So to hit this shot, again, your racket face is slightly open. It's not going to be very open, or else the ball is going to be floaty, and it's not probably going to go as deep as what we'd like. And your racket path is forwards out towards your target, with a little bit of up to down motion as well, but more so forwards than downwards. And that will create a deep shot that bounces and stays low. It makes it tougher for your opponent to pass you. All right, lastly, we're going to talk about the lob. And lob kind of goes in along with the drop shot as a touch shot. The lob is a touch shot. It takes good feel to hit a quality lob. It's not easy to go from behind the baseline, put the ball up into the air and loft it up there and have it drop deeply in the court consistently. That's not easy to do. But the only way to do it well and to hit a good lob is with a backspin with a nice open face. It is possible to hit a topspin lob as well. It is significantly more difficult to hit a topspin lob. You'll see the pros hit it from time to time. But more times than not, you're going to see a backspin lob or a slice lob instead. To hit this shot, your face is going to be very open, probably more so even than the drop shot. And your racket now is going to travel upwards towards the sky. So you want your racket face to be at least 45 degrees, and you also want your racket path to be 45 degrees as well, upwards. So we're trying to loft the ball up into the air and then have it fall back into your opponent's side of the court nice and deep to get your opponent back away from the net where they were and hopefully bounce over them so that you can regain control on the points. Okay, well, there's your four examples of different ways to use slice. If you guys have any questions about any four of those types of shots more specifically, I'd be happy to discuss any of them in depth. But I just wanted to give you guys a brief overview and a general description of why slice is useful and how you can use it in your tennis game. In general, I work with my students to develop a good, strong drive or topspin groundstroke first so that they have the ability to hit the ball confidently and strongly in the court and keep it deep first. But slice is very, very useful. And so it's good to have a well-rounded game and not only be able to attack and hit the ball strongly and deeply, but to be able to have soft touch when you need it as well. And to be able to mix up your game and go back and forth between the two instead of allowing your opponent to get comfortable with one type of shot. Okay, that wraps up today's podcast here at Essential Tennis, episode number 29. Thank you for joining me today. And during this week and this weekend, if you appreciate my efforts here at Essential Tennis and getting out this good information and trying to help the tennis community, you can help me out as well. And you can do that by going to iTunes and subscribing to the Essential Tennis podcast at Apple iTunes on the music store. That's really the biggest way that I get exposure through the podcast here. And the more people subscribe there, the better of a rating my podcast has. And the more people can then find it. So take a couple seconds and subscribe over at the iTunes Music Store, if you don't mind. And I always appreciate when people leave me reviews and comments at the music store as well. Well, that does it for this week. And I look forward to the next podcast, number 30. And that's going to be on Monday, the 15th. And in that podcast, we're going to for the entire show, focus on pushers, the probably the most dreaded type of opponent for the recreational player, somebody who just kind of gets everything back in play, doesn't really do anything very special in terms of being able to attack or pressure, but just plays consistently, usually moves well and gets a lot of balls back in play. We're going to talk about pushers. We're going to talk about how to beat a pusher, and that's going to be the focus of the entire show. So until then, I hope you guys have a great weekend. Get out and play some tennis, and I hope you guys are enjoying your games and the podcast is helping you improve. So until next time, take care and good luck with your tennis.